From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Longtime gardeners and first-timers went all out in this craziest of years, bringing the expression victory garden back into the headlines. We all planted in spring like mad, in fact, so much so that seed companies were swamped and even ran out. But planting season is not over, not even up north where I garden. For late summer into fall harvests and even beyond into winter, I've asked year-round vegetable grower Nikki Jabor to coach us today in the next steps of succession sowing and in smart tactics for plant protection, too, to stretch the season. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Nikki Jabor is author of three books so far, The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener, plus Groundbreaking Food Gardens and Veggie Garden Remix. She's also a contributor to the blog SavvyGardening.com. She creates the award-winning radio program The Weekend Gardener, which is heard throughout Eastern Canada, and she gardens with a vengeance in Nova Scotia. So if Nikki can do it, people, so can we. Welcome back to the program, Nikki.
Thanks, Margaret. It's always so great to chat with you.
Are you having any rain and are you having heat? What's going on up there? Just so we have the temperature.
Yeah, you know, it's been weird. We had early heat, which is kind of unusual for Nova Scotia. And then it morphed to cool. But we had about 6 weeks where I had maybe not even a quarter inch of rain and I had to deep water a lot. But last night, the heavens opened. We got probably an inch and a bit of rain, massive thunderstorms. So I feel like we're getting back to balance. It's getting nice and hot again. So it's a perfect time to get out in the garden.
Good. Well, I'm waiting for that heavens to open thunder thing over here myself. So
fingers crossed.
Yeah. So I bet you're madly taking advantage of every square inch of your garden that becomes available as things are harvested. I sort of picture you up there, you know, if she sees a square foot or a 2 square feet or a linear foot come available, she tucks something in madly. So are you into multiple successions already up there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in some beds, I'm probably in our third succession crop. And I think that's a pretty accurate description of me right now. I was eyeing some of the lettuce earlier today going, I think you're about to bolt. So I'm going to harvest you today or tomorrow. And then in go some carrots and some beets. And of course, I'm also, you know, thinking ahead for later in the season, too. So, yeah, there's no empty space in my food garden right now. It's very looking very lush, even if everything isn't quite in, you know, full production yet. At least it looks very green.
Yeah. When do you get your first tomato?
You know, well, I'm a cheater because I have a polytunnel now. It's year two for my polytunnel. So I will probably get my first tomato in about 2 weeks. But usually it's the last week in July, first week in August when the sun golds start to roll in. Okay. So I'm hoping mid to late July.
Okay. So before we dig in deeper to sort of tactics and which crops and so forth, I want to just say to everybody out loud, you know, both of us are northern gardeners, of course. And, you know, that we're in other regions, the timing of all of this wisdom that you're going to share is different. And I'm going to give a link with a transcript of the show to state by state, region by region, calendars and charts and so forth, so that people in other areas can adapt this, get a little guidance to adapt this. So I'll do that with the transcript. And also with the transcript that we're going to have a book giveaway of your earlier hit book, The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. And the subhead of that is How to Grow Your Own Food 365 Days a Year, No Matter Where You Live. So there you go.
Yeah, and you know, it's really very easy. I think all people really need to know is their first expected fall frost date. And then when you're looking at seed packs, the days to maturity. So it's easy math. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Now, the math, do you add in what some seed people call the fall factor, because days are shorter and temperatures are generally cooler in the second half of the season, as opposed to lengthening hours of light in the spring sowings? Do you add a few couple weeks for the sort of fall factor of diminished light and heat?
I do. I add about 7 to 10 days. And I mean, I just kind of tack an extra week on as I'm calculating. And that seems to work really well. I don't add it more than that, because at that point, then things become ready too early. And, you know, then they might be harvested before winter or late fall, and I don't want them at that point. So 1 week works for me.
Okay. So here we are. I'm waiting for my first ripe tomato as well. Polytunnel or no polytunnel, because I don't have one. but, you know, I know I need to start fresh with some other crops. And I, for instance, put in another row of bush beans the other day. And, you know, so what are some of the food crops? And a lot of people who are listening are probably new listeners, new readers of the website. You know, a lot of people have gotten into the throes of gardening this year in great numbers. And even some experienced gardeners have like expanded what they're doing because of the sort of situation out there. So if we haven't stretched the season before, really, if we haven't grown the second or third sowing of this and that, like, what are the things that you would want us to try our hand at most of all?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to first realize is that anybody can succession plant. You know, growing up, we had this little family vegetable garden, and we never succession planted. So when that initial crop of beans was done, that was it. We never had more beans. And now, as you mentioned, I'm kind of use up every square inch of my garden. But even people listening who maybe are in condos or only have a deck, you know, you can still succession plant in pots. So everybody should be succession planting if you definitely want to, you know, get as much food as possible this season. So for me right now, I am putting more bush beans in, like you said, every 2 to 3 weeks until usually mid-July, I will put bush beans in. I'm also planting a fall crop of sugar snap peas. I'm tucking more zucchini and cucumbers in the garden because, you know, they take anywhere from 50 to 65 days. And I still have that in my season before that frost, even with the fall factor worked in. So there's time for that. You know, soon it'll be time in about a week or two for all the fall and winter carrots and the beets. And of course, cabbages, cauliflowers, all of those cabbage cousin crops, broccoli. I'm starting them indoors right now under my grow lights so that I can put them in the garden in about 4 weeks. Because if I direct sow those in the garden, they're, you know, it's going to be hard to keep those little seeds and seedlings happy in the intense hot heat and sun of summer. Plus, the slugs, even though it's been dry, they have been just brutal is the best way to describe them this year. I mean, you know, it'll be hot and sunny and I'm out there handpicking slugs. I can't even explain it, but they're multiplying like crazy. I'm picking teeny tiny ones, giant fat ones. I'm at the point where I'll have a handful of slimy slugs. I don't even care anymore. I'll just keep on picking them. So I do like to start some things indoors under grow lights because it's a little easier than trying to, you know, nurture them along in the garden when the soil's hot and dry.
Right. So that's one of your tactical approaches, is to start it in a more controlled environment and have these like homemade plugs to plug in when you see that square foot come available, when you pull some of that lettuce, right?
Yeah. And it's one of the easiest things you can do. If you have grow lights, use them, because even like you mentioned, lettuce won't germinate when it's hotter than, well, I don't know the Fahrenheit, but 27 Celsius. So probably 80 Fahrenheit, I guess. Mm-hmm. So if you want the lettuce for fall and winter, start them indoors in mid to late August, plug them in your garden when they're a couple weeks old, and you'll have just bypassed the frustration of trying to keep the seeds and seedlings happy in, again, that hot, dry soil.
Right. Now, the list you just gave, which I know it wasn't like the comprehensive list that you were reading from a script or something, or from one of your books, by the way, but it includes almost everything except for like tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants and potatoes, right? I mean, it's pretty comprehensive that you can push a lot of things. You can do it again with a lot of things. And
it is. Yeah. Although, Margaret, you're making me feel a little guilty because I actually have a few tomato suckers I've rooted. I'm just going to try to put those in and see what happens. And I might have accidentally gone to a garden center today and I might have accidentally bought another pepper plant. So we'll see what happens. Normally, I wouldn't plant those in early July, but I'm going to put them in pots. I'm going to put them in my polytunnel, and maybe I'll still get a harvest from them this year. I don't think it's a bad thing to experiment and try new things. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's going to be fun.
Right. So you didn't mention, I don't know if you mentioned herbs, but one of the other things that I like to do is, you know, the basil that I put in May, my last frost is sometime in later May. So sometime in May that I might have put young plants out of basil. They are starting to flower, or they have been flowering, and they're going to get woody and big and whatever. Right. And, you know, my tomatoes, my paste tomatoes for my sauce, that's not coming till August, September cusp, really, in big amounts. And so I might do another, some more basil. Do you do herbs as well again?
I actually do. I had gotten some seeds from Johnny's not that long ago, including a new mildew-resistant basil. And so I started them about a month ago, and they're now about an inch and a half tall. So I have about, don't ask me why, but about 40 basil seedlings I need to find more space for in my garden. So I do. I usually plant basil twice for the exact reasons you mentioned. The tomatoes come on much later. They'll start to flower. I do pinch the plants back during the growing season for a while, but of course that doesn't, you know, it's not as effective forever. It's best to have a second crop. So these guys are going to go in the garden in the next week or so, and then they'll be ready in late August, early September, into late September or whenever that first frost comes.
Right. I'm one of the things I love the most in the second crop is the peas. I love edible potted peas and shelling peas and so forth. And then it almost feels like they're sweeter in the second, the fall harvest, because they're not bumping into that heat of July. Like my first sowing bumps in, is around now. It comes to harvest around early July, late June, early July. So kind of gets fried, you know.
It's true. Totally true. And, you know, yeah, the summer peas, a lot of, because they're planted so early, a lot of people think they need cold temperatures to germinate, but they don't. They germinate really quickly and just fine as long as you keep the soil moist in early to midsummer. So, yeah, the sugar snap peas are my absolute favorite. And I'm going to be sowing a very heavy crop of those. And we'll probably start harvesting those early to mid-September, but they'll take us through for about 3 to 4 weeks. And, I mean, peas in September, what a treat. You can never have enough.
It really is. It really is. And that's the only time I really do the shelling peas, is I don't do them in spring, but I do them in fall for using in recipes that I'm going to freeze or just freezing bags of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I need you to come here for some therapy, some on-site therapy.
if the borders were open, Margaret, I'd be on my way down.
You know, my idea of season extension, I've never had a greenhouse. I've never had a polytunnel. You know, I kind of rig things up and it's a little informal, let's just say. And so, you know, at my house, you might see wire hoops that I've had for years. You know, I have different sizes and so forth of hoops that basically stretch across a bed and are a couple, you know, a foot or two high. And, you know, and I have fabric, lighter weight and heavier weight fabrics. I use a lot of clothespins to hold them on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of... If we wanted to get started, if you were going to teach us, here's the thing to start with in terms of, because there's some gear we need to do some of the season extension besides succession sowing tactics. We also are going to need to be there with some protection and so forth. So what would it be a frost blanket? Like, what would it be that you would say, here's the beginner's kit? Do you know what I mean? Of gear?
Totally. Yeah, I love the way you look at that, actually. To be honest, the beginner's kit isn't going to cost you any money. If you're going to start with one thing for season extension this year, I would get some shredded leaves, you know, the fall leaves that fall on your lawn in autumn, mow on them, you know, shred them up. And then I would put them over top my carrots and my beets in, you know, before the ground freezes, which for me is usually sometime in mid to late November. And then you can harvest those carrots or beets all winter long. If you want to take it a tiny step further, you mentioned the frost blankets, the row covers. Absolutely. You can, you know, make little wire hoops out of 12 gauge wire. You can, you know, buy hoops. You can make PVC hoops. You can make hoops out of a lot of things. I've even used hula hoops to make hoops. Cut them in half and it's a low hoop, but it works. And cover it with that row cover or a clear sheet of plastic. And you can extend your season by 4 weeks or more, depending on what type of crop you have. You could cover lettuces in like October, November, spinach, arugula, kale. I mean, there's really no end to the different crops you can use for season extension. So you could start with a mulch, which is really easy and cheap, or you could start with maybe some fabrics and hoops. And I mean, after a year or two, you might think, maybe I do want a cold frame. You could build a super simple cold frame from like a wooden box with a clear polycarbonate or an old window top. And then all of a sudden, you've got this little mini microclimate that you can use to produce food all winter long. So it's sort of like the gateway, I think, into year-round vegetable gardening. Once you get that first cold frame, there's just no looking back.
Right. Now, when you do use fabric, such as like the simplest form of fabric would be like a row cover, the thicker, heavier kind for adding warmth, for instance, at the end of the season, how do you hold it down? What is your method? You know, do you use those earth pins? Because I find that kind of wrecks the fabric a lot of time. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? What's the gear that does the holding down so it doesn't blow away or whatever?
Well, for my mini hoop tunnels, if it's just fabric, fabric isn't something I would use all winter long. Right. I would use that in spring or fall. So I'm not, you know, making something super, you know, strong to hold it from winter winds and stuff. So for spring and fall, I generally will weigh it down with rocks or logs around the sides. I don't like the staples too much because, as you mentioned, they poke holes in the fabric, thus shortening its life dramatically. Because once you've got a hole, it's going to tear and it's frustrating. So you can weigh it down really easily. You can also bury the ends of the fabric. I tend not to do that too much unless I'm trying to use lightweight fabric to prevent insect damage. Because otherwise, every time you want to harvest, you got to unbury the fabric and it gets messy. Yeah. So I try not to do that too much. I prefer to weigh it down. You know, and if I'm doing plastic mini hoop tunnels for winter harvesting, I actually, along the sides of my bed, the length of the mini hoop tunnel, I will just take like a 1 by 2 inch by 8 foot long, because my beds are 8 feet long, piece of untreated lumber, and just roll up the sides of that plastic into it. And then I'll put like 2 screws into my raised wooden beds, and that'll hold it down for winter. And then I'll just lift the ends open when I want to harvest. But I don't do that for the fabric, because again, that would hold, that would damage the fabric. And again, the fabric's only on for a short amount of time. But for the 6 months of winter I get, the little plastic covered mini hoop tunnels work great.
So no matter what we do, really, no matter what we sew or plug in that we've sewn indoors or which gear we buy, we also want to have the sort of tactic of getting, taking the best care of these plants, each generation of these plants, right? And you've alluded to a little bit of this, like you kind of talked a little bit about, you know, when it's hot out, it's harder on the young plants especially and so forth. But some of your sort of cultural tactics for the second half of the season that might be different from in spring, because obviously the soil is less moist naturally, you know, stuff is coming, older stuff's coming to harvest. Any sort of cultural tips you want to share as well?
Well, I mean, this is a time of year, it's been a very, usually I'm complaining about the amount of rain we've had, and, you know, this year is not that year. I'm complaining with the lack of rain. So I've been deep watering. Now, you know, when you're succession planting, I mentioned when the soil is hot and dry, it's hard to establish a crop. So when you do have newly planted seeds or seedlings, you'll have to give those areas a little more TLC. You could put a little wire hoop tunnel over top your newly planted succession bean bed or your carrot bed, and then cover it with shade cloth or a row cover now, just for the first week or two, so that the soil doesn't dry out as quickly and those seeds have more of a chance to germinate. And once they've popped up, you can remove the cover so, you know, they can have the sunshine to grow. So I do use mini hoop tunnels in summer with those types of covers, but paying attention to watering, especially when you've got crops like the peas and the beans and the cucumbers and zucchinis, once they begin to flower and fruit, they have higher moisture needs. So if they're not getting it from rain, I'm going to have to play Mother Nature and get out there and deep water them. And I think most gardeners know that deep watering is better than getting out there every day and giving the water a little sprinkle of the soil. You want to make sure you water to encourage plenty of deep roots. And then I mulch. I mulch my tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, cucumbers, zucchini, any long-term crops that are in the garden. They're mulched with straw or shredded leaves to lock that soil moisture in. And then, of course, you've got the side benefits of fewer weeds because there's a mulch on the soil. And as the mulch breaks down, it adds, you know, organic matter to the soil. But it also, around things like tomatoes, it helps prevent the spread of soil-borne diseases like tomato blight. So there's many benefits to mulching your crop. So I'm big on mulch.
Right. It's been very interesting this year. You talked about the, you know, stress of dry conditions, which we've had here too. And we've had this up and down. You know, it was hot when it isn't usually hot, and it was cooler than when it wasn't usually cool. And it's all over the place. But what I haven't had a big outbreak, and I know I'm going to kick myself for mentioning this, right? Knock on something. Yeah. I haven't had a lot of insect infestations. Normally by now I would have seen in the kale, collards, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cabbage, whatever, the brassicas, I would have seen various kinds of caterpillars.
I can send you some. It's no problem.
Nice. Thank you so much. Are they allowed to cross the border? I'm not sure.
Sadly, the border doesn't seem to work for them. And it's only in the past week that early in the season, I go out. I did have my cabbages covered with insect netting over wire hoops, so I didn't have an early moth, like the early moths laying their eggs. But then I took them off to let more light in, and then I got the eggs, and now I do have some cabbage worms. But I go out, and I pick them off, and the robins are all throughout my garden, so I keep just tossing them to the robins. So they're grateful, at least. I don't know.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I think the morning, there's nothing really for an organic gardener. There's really no substitute for sort of a ritual. And I like the early morning time of day of inspection of, especially the undersides of leaves, I think, where things are lurking like eggs before.
It's true. And people should, if you see eggs on the underside of your leaves, before you squish them or wipe them off with a gloved hand, make sure you know what they are, you know, because I know that cabbage worm eggs look like tiny little yellowish bullets. So I recognize them. I've had them for years, I know. But I mean, they could be ladybug eggs or eggs for lace wings or something else that's good that you want in the garden. So before you kill a bug or an egg, people should definitely ID it or learn what it is first.
Yeah, my favorite place is bugguide.net. It's a bunch of universities in the U.S., I guess, that you know, people, it's a volunteer thing. But I find that I can upload there if I'm really stuck. A lot of times I have a field guide that will tell me I have enough books, reference books, entomological reference books that I can usually figure it out. But then I can use bugguide.net or in some people just use like iNaturalist or one of the other citizen science apps and just upload that picture and get a crowdsourced ID pretty quick if they know what the plant is and what the region is and the date in the picture. It usually helps someone say, oh, that's such and such, you know, which is great. Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's no substitute for vigilance in the organic garden, really, is there?
No, I mean, it's incredibly important. And my province is organic, so you can't go buy weed and feed for your lawn. You can't, you know, use these chemicals anymore. And we haven't been able to for, I think, 19, 20 years now. So you have to learn what these things are. And, you know, a morning cup of tea in the garden as you're looking for slugs and looking for cabbage worms. It's kind of a ritual. I love being out there early in the morning.
Yeah. So in the last few minutes, I wanted to ask you, which I don't know. I don't know what kind of projects you've been up to. I know you have been working on a new book that will come out. When is the new book coming? In the fall or when is
it? It was supposed to be next year, but actually they pushed it up. So it'll be coming out in December of 2020. So sooner than later.
Great. Yeah. So besides that, I wondered, any new project in the garden, any new crop that, you know, the last book, Veggie Garden Remix, I think was the last one. So many new crops that even I had never heard of. I put in a whole new asparagus plot because my 30-year-old one just was petering out. And I decided for my old age here, I wanted, you know, the rest of my life, plenty of asparagus every year. So that's what I did. So anything that you've done this year that, you know, is different?
Well, I mean, here in Nova Scotia, we were all, like many places, locked down, and we were home for 3 months. And, you know, it's only just opening a little up now. But during that time, I think everybody took time to put in gardens, look at their lawns, make new decks. So I've been tackling lots of outdoor projects in my ornamental garden that I put off for far, far too long. But I've also built new cucumber trellises. I put in so many pandemic potato patches. I had extra straw bales, so I've been growing these huge gardens of potatoes and straw bales, where I've loosened the straw everywhere so the potato plants will produce the potatoes within the straw so they stay really clean. So I've got probably 200 seed potatoes planted in loose straw. I know. Listen, I don't even know what to say to myself anymore. So anywhere I could plant more food this year, I did, mainly because everybody I know said, we're coming to your garden this year if the grocery stores start to close. So I was like, I better expand my plantings, you know, and I am planting more fun things for myself. But because this was a year where the seed companies, my gosh, they were overwhelmed. It was hard to get stuff. I did get some things early, but certain things I never did get. So I've got a few new types of cucumber melons this year, sort of like along the lines of Armenian cucumbers, which I grow because my husband's Lebanese and I have seeds from his village from many years ago. And so I grow a lot of cucumber melons, but I'm growing lots of new tomatoes. There's a 14, 15-year-old tomato expert from Toronto, Emma Biggs. And so she sends me tomato seeds and I send her other seeds and I'm growing some of her amazing varieties. So I've got a lot of fun little things I'm growing, but unfortunately, because of the lack of seeds and the pressure of the spring, I didn't get as much as I would have liked to try this year.
Mm. Oh, quick question. The cucumber trellises you just mentioned, are those of concrete reinforcing wire or what are they made out of?
It was hard to source them. So I have a whole bunch of cucumber trellises that are vertical made of those I made years ago. I have tunnels for cucumbers made of those, which the 4x8 sheets of concrete reinforcing mesh. But these ones, I had some scrap wood from another project. So I just made like 5-foot tall 3 foot wide, just honestly an A-frame trellis, really simple. I also grow cucumbers in my polytunnel up strings and twine. So I grow cucumbers in lots of ways. The only way I don't grow them is on the ground.
Yeah.
Because I get bugs, I get diseases. Yeah. It's just, if I can grow it vertically, it's going up. That's my rule.
Well, Nikki Jabor, as soon as the border opens, I'm going to expect you for the consultation on site here.
I'll be there.
Thank you. And we'll have the giveaway of the book, as I mentioned. And thank you so much. And lots of links for other people in other regions, as promised with the transcript. Thank you so much for making the time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a joy. Take care, Margaret.
Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening to, and don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.